could ask everybody to take their seats.
Good morning, everyone. Thanks for joining us, and welcome to our first official meeting, subcommittee from the Moore Commission Special Ed Select Working Group. And I am Representative Michelle Cook. I cover the 65th District, which is Torrington, and this is my third term here. I am on the Education Committee, the Human Services Committee, the Aging Committee, and Public Health. And I co-chair the Primary Care. I'm on the Education Committee of Moore and now this one. So I'm excited about this and moving forward, looking to see what we can do. I want to thank you all for volunteering your time for the next however many months and years we all might be together, as we decided that this is a sorority and a fraternity. You're in for life. And I look forward to working with you all and help making some really needed and great changes to our special education system in the state of Connecticut. And I will turn this over to Brian.
I think what we're going to do is just go around the room and ask everyone to just briefly introduce themselves, who they're here to represent, so we get a level set there, and then we will go around again to ask for suggested topics, speakers, and proposed, discussion topics. So I'm Brian Becker. I'm the state representative from the 19th District, parts of West Hartford, Avon, and Farmington. I serve on the Commerce, Energy and Technology, Finance, Revenue and Bonding, and Program Review and Investigation Committees, and I'm very happy to be a co-chair here as well. And Terry?
Oh, thought I won something. Terry Wood, I represent the 141st District, which is Norwalk and Darien, and I'm very happy to be involved in this group. I have had a child in special education program here in the state and see the joys and see the frustrations, and I'm very happy to be working with you all. So,
George, you're up.
Morning, I'm George Raphael with Connecticut Conference of Municipalities, and here to represent our municipal members, who obviously have a stake in this and an interest in how both service delivery and funding for special ed is handled. So, thank you.
Good morning. I'm Dr. Deborah Wheeler. I am the superintendent of schools in Litchfield. I also have been asked to represent CAPS, which is the Connecticut Association for Public School Superintendents. In addition, I am the parent of an adult child with a disability, and I served as a long-term special ed director, so I am deeply interested in the work and appreciate the opportunity to serve. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Deborah Richards. I'm the Director of Student Services for CREC, and I'm here to represent the Regional Education Service Centers, where the RESCs also have an adult son with a disability.
Good morning. I'm Patrice McCarthy, the Deputy Director and General Counsel for the Connecticut Association of Boards of Education.
Good morning. My name is Betsy Guerra. I'm the Executive Director of the Connecticut Council of Small Towns. We represent approximately 110 communities throughout Connecticut, and certainly special education funding is a big issue for our members, but also looking at ways of providing the services more efficiently to our residents.
Hi, I'm John Filchak. I'm the Executive Director of the Northeastern Connecticut Council of Governments. I represent 15, soon to be 16 towns in the northeast corner of the state, all small and rural towns. Special education is a major issue to us, and we try in our area to do things together, do things regionally. We have things we do together effectively in animal control and property revaluation, et cetera. So we're hoping we can come up with some novel, some unique ideas to help in this on this issue. So thank you.
Good morning. Kimberly Planis, Director of People Personnel Services for Hampden Public Schools. Thank you for the opportunity to be here, and I look forward to working with this group.
My name is Dr. Michael Regan. I'm the Director of Special Education and Cooperative Educational Services in Trumbull. Prior to that, I was the Director of Pupil Personnel Services in both Newtown and Region 17. I am representing the Connecticut Council of Administrators of Special Education, of which I am the current president.
Good morning. My name is Shelley Davis. I represent the Hartford Federation of Paraprofessionals. I also work with the AFT. I am also glad to be here to get some input and to share with you what actually goes on with the Hartford, with the paraprofessionals as far as special education. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Jody Harkins. I'm a special education teacher in Fairfield Public Schools. I'm also, I live in Stratford, so I will be kind of collaborating and representing both towns, and I'm very happy to be a part of this group.
Good morning. My name is May Flexer. I'm a state representative for Killingley and Plainfield.
Good morning. Jay Case. I represented the 63rd District of Winchester, Torrington, Colebrook, and Goshen. Grew up all my life with an older brother with both physical and mental disabilities. I studied human services and families with disabilities at Northeastern University, so I have a big background in it, and I'm happy to be here and give any information I can. Thank you.
Good morning. State Representative Jonathan Steinberg, representing the 136 in Westport. And I suppose it's relevant, I am a graduate of the Alternate Route Certification to Teach program. So I have had the benefit of learning a lot about how we teach students with disabilities.
Well, thank you all. I hope you noticed that we did start at 11 o'clock on the dot, and that it will be our goal is to start on time. This building is notorious for late starts, but we're going to do our best to be punctual and to respect everyone's time. And so with that, I think we should go on to the next issue, which is to get input from members on ideas you've got for topics, speakers. This will not be the only opportunity to do that, but we want to have a place to start. And I probably should let you know that in January, we've already talked, the chairs here, to set up the next couple of meetings. And we're going to have the State Department of Education come in on January 9th to speak about how special education is currently being delivered throughout the state. And that will be followed by, on the 23rd of January, the Office of Fiscal Analysis and Office of Legislative Research coming in to talk to us about how the money goes in the state. And our own David Desjardins, who's helping us out here in a big way, will also give a presentation. He's got a short fact sheet that will give us a series of facts about special education in the state. And the goal of those two meetings is really to kind of give us all a level set, so we kind of all starting from the same place, and then we can launch from there. But we do want to plan out future meetings from there, and that's where the ideas that you give us today will play a role. And, of course, we can add on as we go. This is going to be an exploration.
Okay. So from there, I think what we would like to do is, as we've asked you all in emails, and to come, you know, come to the table prepared to give us some topics that you would like to see addressed, if you want to voice some concerns of things that you think that we should be able to figure out how to go. We'd like to take that opportunity and kind of just dive right into this and not waste any time. I'd like to start with George, though, because I know that you have to go to another meeting. So we're going to start with George to my left, and then we'll just work our way around the room. If there's a comment that you have or some type of a discussion on his topics of discussion, please just kind of give us a nod or lift your finger a little bit. We'll acknowledge you. And when he's finished, we'll give you the okay to go ahead and have a conversation. If you hear that little ding, it's because there's more than one microphone on at a time. We would like to have been the lottery, but but since it's just about the microphones, we are not as fortunate. So, George, you're up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just quickly, as I said, you know, representing 156 municipalities, I think it is now, we hear all the time from our members, selectmen, selectwomen, mayors, especially in some smaller towns, the significant impact that even one child entering the school district can have on budgets. And it's a significant issue, and something you can't plan for, obviously. So that's been the biggest issue that we hear, because the municipal side obviously isn't directly involved in the service delivery. So the funding issue has been a major issue for us. But obviously how this service gets delivered is important as well. And we're just glad to be at the table to learn at this point on some of the aspects that are not as familiar to us. But also the funding issue for us is a big issue. I don't know how much we're going to get into, and I know it's controversial as far as the whole burden of proof issue. That's something that has been a concern to our members as well. And we hope to have some discussions around that and see if there's some solution from our perspective that that would benefit everybody. So really the funding element is a key component to our concerns. But we're here to listen and to learn and to offer our help in terms of service delivery and the way we can help on the municipal side to deliver those services, whether it happens regionally, statewide, however it ends up being decided. But we're here to listen as much as anything else at this point. And I do apologize that I have to go present to the other Moore Commission that's currently going on. But thank you for having us.
George, before you run, the other thing that we would like, if you all, when you bring your topics to the table, if you have suggested speakers that you would like to see come in and present in front of us, I mean, and if not, or if somebody else has, you know, somebody that we could bring into the table and invite them to speak to discuss something that you have brought up, I think that that's very important, too. We need to hear from all sides, all parties across the state, and maybe it's somebody out of the state. We have no problem, you know, asking them to come in and please, you know, speak in front of us and educate us on the way that they're working it.
I think it'll be really beneficial having these first two meetings that Representative Becker described, having LLR and SD come in and OFA to talk about, kind of lay the groundwork so we all know where we're starting from. And I think that'll spur some ideas on some speakers. We have some that we may present as well. So thank you.
Thank you. Does anybody have any comments or concerns or any suggestions regarding what Georgia brought to the table? Perfect. Okay.
Deb? Oh, well, I can just segue on to that. Two of the things that George mentioned. One is burden of proof, which really is, when you look at it closely, it's an onion with many layers. And it's going to take a lot of time and energy to look at that, but I think that's number one. Coming from a small municipality, I know that is quite a matter of concern for us with our fiscal responsibility. In addition, we firmly believe that in many cases, the money can be better spent directly servicing children than on the ancillary fees that go along with potential litigation, but we'll get into more of that later. I also would like to prioritize the possibility of regionalization of services. My district is currently working with a neighboring district, Region 6, through our RESC Education Connection to determine how we may be able to develop a shared services model and build on some small programs that are already in the northwest corner. So those are two of the issues that I see as of primary importance for this committee to address.
Deb, do you have any speakers that you would suggest at this time? I mean, not, and understand, if you don't have those suggested people, it's not that we can't bring those back forward. We're just saying we can start in sending some invites out and planning some future meetings as we move along if you do.
I do not right now, but I would be happy to forward that to you as I flesh it out.
I think Education Connection would be a great conversation.
That's who we're talking with right now about, as I said, about the regionalization. So bringing Jonathan Cost in might be a good idea.
And before we move to you, Deborah, I'd like to let Representative Abercrombie give a moment so she can introduce herself as well.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Representative Kathy Abercrombie. I represent the 83rd District, which is Meriden and Berlin. I am co-chairwoman of Human Services and subcommittee chair of Human Services for Appropriations. And I'm thrilled to be here today and look forward to the healthy discussion. And I love the way you described it as an onion. You're absolutely right. So this is something that I know is really heavy on our districts. But I will say from the beginning, and anybody that knows me knows how I feel about this, we also have to be careful because we're talking about a lot of our autistic families who do not have the resources to hire lawyers to be able to fight for what they need for their children. So I'm going to say that from the beginning because anybody that knows me knows those are my people that I fight for day in and day out. So I do agree with you, and I do believe that there are ways that we can do it better, but I want everyone to understand where I come from right from the beginning. So thank you.
Thanks, Kath. And true, I mean, you've been an incredible spokesperson for the autistic community, and you know, you've done yeoman's work, so we thank you for that. Deborah Richards.
I tried to brainstorm a bunch of organizations and put them into three different categories. So I think one certainly that's most critical are the parent organizations throughout the state. And there's three that I think we should start with because they more broadly represent parents and they have a responsibility based on their legislative requirements to gather that information anyway. So we have a Connecticut Family Support Council, which is a legislative body to advise our legislator on gaps in services for individuals with disabilities. We also have a State Advisory Council on Special Education, who's charged with advising the State Board of Education on gaps and issues around special education. And then we have a federally funded parent and training information center called the Connecticut Parent Advocacy Center. And I'd start with them because they have broad representation for all types of disabilities. And then certainly there's a long list of, certainly organizations around Down syndrome, around learning disabilities, around autism. But it might be helpful to get that broad perspective first and then reach out to more individual constituent bases. And then when I think of kind of the state agencies, I know that we're going to hear from the State Department of Ed, but certainly our Department of Developmental Disabilities, who deals with that 21-year-old transition and what happens as a result of our services and some of the concerns. Our Bureau of Rehabilitation Service is probably the other adult service agency that would serve young adults as they transition out. And then I would also look at perhaps the Office of Protection and Advocacy, another state organization who does a lot of the advocacy work for districts and general services with state service agencies. And then moving down to the folks who are kind of in the education field, I know we had a discussion about private special education facilities. So there is an organization, the Connecticut Association of Private Special Education Facilities. So I think that would be helpful. Certainly, we talked about EdConnect, and you know, I'm here as a representative of the RESCs. I think hearing from representatives of the RESCs around the regional efforts that are taking place and what's being successful right now so that we can capture that. We also have another federally funded organization in the state out of the UConn Health Center, which is the Papanico Center for Excellence in Developmental Disabilities. They deal with issues kind of birth through death around disabilities, but certainly are very active in the birth through 21 arena, and they work very closely with our Connecticut birth to three system for young students, so DDS could represent them, but so could the University Center for Excellence. And I can give you contacts for all of those folks, David.
Thank you. That's an incredible list. That'll keep us going until maybe 2015.
You can top that list.
Yeah. Anybody else? I think that you've brought up some very interesting people to bring to the table, actually, and people that we haven't even brainstormed, and I think this is what's important about, you know, everybody's perspectives are a little bit different. So thank you. Patrice?
I would echo the need to hear from the regional service centers because I think there's a lot of best practices already in place around regionalism for these services. I also want to echo the need to address the burden of proof issue, as complex as it may be. It's something that we consistently hear about from school boards and administrators. In addition, I was at a meeting several months ago convened by the State Department of Education where the issue of the hearing process itself and ways to make that more effective was raised, and there was actually what appeared to be the beginning of some consensus among the attorney advocates for families and for school districts. That has not been pursued, so I would encourage that at one of our meetings we hear at the same meeting from the advocates. As much as we would like to see less litigation, we know that in many districts it's fairly common practice to have advocates involved at a fairly early stage in these discussions. And then finally, the issue of mental health services, and as we unfortunately indicated earlier, or the lack thereof for our young people. Thank you.
Thank you. Betsy?
Thank you. I mean, certainly COSS is interested in the funding issue because it is becoming a significant problem in terms of our local budgets. It's one of the biggest cost drivers. It's also one of the most unpredictable cost drivers. And I don't know if there's any way to address that, but I would put that on the table. You know, the problem is that the budgets are adopted usually in April, May, certainly by June, and yet it's based on enrollment for the following year, and they really don't have any idea how many students are going to have with special needs. And again, I don't know if there's any way to address it, but it's a huge problem. And then certainly the reimbursement thresholds. I think given the type of special needs services that are being provided, a lot of them just fall right under that threshold, so that you're finding that school districts aren't receiving any reimbursement and they're spending a considerable amount of money. We're also interested in looking at the burden of proof issue and looking at voluntary shared services models, I think, is something worth exploring.
For the most part, I'll agree at this point with everything that's been said. The one I'd like to add as a topic, I guess, would be transportation. How it's being done now and from there, you know, how it might be improved. I know one of the services we provide, I operate the transit system for Northeast Connecticut, but we have significant limitations as to our ability to move students around. We sat down with the local RESC to talk about that. So there's barriers, and I think that bringing in the Department of Transportation and others to talk about that, there may be some opportunities there to find some savings and efficiencies. So that would be my major one right now.
I concur with the topics that have been presented. It's kind of hard to come number seven or so and really have something to add. But first on my list was really to put mental health services on the table, just in terms of the, obviously there's been a lot of tragic events of late, but it is something that is definitely on our minds and a lot of needs that we're seeing. So to figure out if there is a way, number one, how we can maximize the services we have, how we can provide more services, and perhaps through a shared consortium kind of a model, that might be a way to go. In terms of the transportation, Hamden actually is one of a few towns in our area who is in the midst of a transportation consortium we started last year. And I think for us, it's kind of gotten off to a slow start, so I'd definitely be interested in hearing everyone's thoughts and ideas for collaboration. Certainly, in terms of the funding issues, it is certainly something we feel often when we have students move in unexpectedly with significant services, and as we strive to provide them what they need and should have, it does become a challenge when we've already planned and budgeted and things like that. So I'd definitely be interested in collaborating some more on that.
I'm going to add a little bit to that burden of proof issue. Patrice mentioned the due process system, and I was part of the group that was in consensus around we have a broken system. Having gone through multiple due process proceedings myself and hearing from other district directors, these things can take up to 21 days to resolve a dispute, which is the longest period of time in the nation. Generally speaking, in the majority of states, they're resolved in 1 or 2 days. So we do have a problem with our basic system of due process and how we can get these claims figured out and get things moving along. I'm going to add two new topics to the list. The first is nexus determination, specific to children who are part of the state system, and there is no intention to return that child back to their residing town or their parent. Regardless of whether that happens or not, it's been my experience that the town where the child at one time resided or where the parent resides where the child will never return to continues to bear the burden of cost. I know that my own specific case was appealed all the way up to Superior Court. The other topic is of smaller scale, but I think there's the potential for an immediate financial impact benefit to districts, which is how the State Department of Education manages special education records specific to the individual education plan. Directors have been asking for a number of years for the state to take over management of those plans, in that they would provide us with a database in which we could then enter in our, create our IEPs, manage those. Currently, districts contract with outside providers at significant additional cost to the districts on a yearly basis in order to do this. And it's our intention to try to continue to ask for state control over those IEP databases. I know that the databases have been developed in certain districts that are very functional, but there's a hesitancy from the State Department of Ed's perspective to take that role over. But we're talking a difference of some districts, and an average-sized district, we're talking a difference of about $25,000 to maybe $35,000 annually to manage their IEPs. And we believe that if the state did this, that they could do it for a much less amount of money. And I think that that's an important thing that should be looked at right away.
To add on to what Mike had to say, I think the focus of the special education should be providing maximum frontline interaction at a minimum cost. Just as the charities have to disclose what percentage of every donation dollar goes into direct aid, I think we should consider finding and setting maximum levels of each special ed dollar that goes into administration rather than a direct provision of services to the children with special ed needs, such special education. And with saying that, I think we also need to look into the dollar amounts that we spend on outside consultants, as what do they come and do. And I would like to start with a couple of programs, one that works for Hartford, the ABA, Creative Intervention. It's been a big concern, actually, what are our children benefiting? And those are the two I would like to put on the list. Thank you.
That lottery again. The first one was dollars going to the administration versus classroom. And then what was the second one?
The second one was the outside consultants that we have coming in for special needs for certain programs.
Well, going almost last, it's hard to add to it, but I do know with both towns that I've spoken to, the burden of proof is a top priority.
Yeah, just a few things, and one of my top ones, what John spoke about, was transportation, because it's a heavy burden on the local education systems. We have a lot of out-of-districting that takes place in our community, and we're trying to do our best to bring a lot of the special education back into the community. but it's educating those teachers to do that. I was at a school the other day where it was an elementary school, but where special needs children are in the everyday class, which is great. I'm fine with mainstreaming. I love it. But because of budgets, paraprofessionals have been cut and all that. So when there's a problem or an issue with a special needs child, the teacher has to relieve themselves from the room, leaving the others not to be educated. So there's a lot of things to work about. And the one main thing that really comes to my head, too, is special education parents, they're very passionate about their children. So that's where you come into the legal costs, and you come in because they want everything they can for their child, which they deserve, but we have to find a way that we can afford it and we can do the right thing to help them so that the legal costs, as Kathy said, aren't an impediment to them to get what they need for their children, because everybody deserves everything that the next person sitting next to them has. But that's just topping. You guys all have great topics to come across. I don't know how much time we have, which is, I think we should meet every day.
Three times, I'll remember. Okay, great topics. I would also have to say the districts that I represent are concerned about burden of proof and figuring out a way that can make that a little more workable. But I also understand the concerns that Representative Abercrombie brought up. A couple things. One is I would love to see looking into the forms, because I think the special ed forms, I don't know about you all, but make my eyes glaze over when you look at them. They're hard to read. They don't make sense. It's illogical, and I don't think it's helpful in the process. And I would love to look at how we can make the forms easier to understand and more helpful to delivering a better education and services to the kids. Second, absolutely concur with the mental health and behavioral health, looking at that, because it is a preventative service, and I know prevention is hard to fund, but having had kids go through public school system and now they're all in their 20s, you just see the value of behavioral and mental health care in middle school, certainly elementary school too, but especially middle school and high school, and how absolutely essential it is to have that. The last subject is something I've seen in both suburban districts and the city districts, city schools. When you have bright kids with learning disabilities and they are given a dumbed-down curriculum, further frustrating them, and I would love to see some investigation on that. That's something that's not really talked about, but I know a lot of parents, particularly boys who are affected by boys who have very high verbal IQ, they've got word processing issues, executive function issues, and they're put in lower-level classes, which just makes them angry and frustrated. And I see it in both suburban districts and inner-city districts, and I think we really need to be looking at that. A couple of years ago, I read an article in the New York Times, and it gave the statistics. In Bridgeport Public Schools, 50% of the boys who start Bridgeport Public Schools don't graduate. 50% of those boys end up in jail. And 70%, it was either 65 or 75%, I still have the article in my file at home, 65 to 75% of those boys had learning disabilities. So we're not doing something right by these boys. Suburban districts, they patch it together a little better, but I think we need to be serving all these boys a whole lot better than we are. Again, it tends to affect boys, the executive function LDs, and the word processing more than girls, for a variety of reasons, and I do have some experts. Sally Reese at the NEAG School, Susan Baum at NEAG School, Joe Renzulli, these are all top experts, and we're so lucky to have them 25 minutes away. Educational psychologist Chris Bogart, who is based in southwestern Fairfield County and does a lot with it is predominantly boys that are affected by this. So that's all. Thank you.
Thanks, Terry. You make a great point, and I think that we often lump some children with special needs, and we don't necessarily look at the individual aspects, whether it be female or male or age groups or the deficiencies. We just say that's a special ed child. And I have a son who has dyslexia, and we often lump him into you know, the label of other health impaired because we don't have a title for it because we don't have educators to educate for it. So, I mean, you know, I deal with it each and every day. So it is you don't realize what those individual items actually do to a child.
Can I get a sledgehammer? It's these boys carry the, again, these tend to be majority boys. They carry it with them for a long, long time, both the city and suburban. So I really look forward to helping that particular group.
Agreed. I'd like to move over to Representative Abercrombie with her thoughts, suggestions. Throwing you right on the spot.
We're used to that in this building. I think there's a lot of great ideas around this table. And I think my hope is out of this that we will have at least a starting point, you know, as far as where do we go from here. I think the transportation is a huge issue. I think that we as a state do not fulfill our obligation as to what we should be paying for special ed. The feds don't pay us what they're supposed to pay us, and then it trickles down that we don't pay you as districts. So that's a huge issue that I think that we can look at. And I think it's something that we really have to put on the front burner and look at and really try and make a difference with it. I also think that we need to, which was brought up, the regional, you know, find out what districts are doing. As an example, you know, in my district, we have an autism center that we started so that we could keep more kids in district. I know space is an issue in a lot of districts, but it's something that we should be sharing these ideas, you know. And we have a lot of great organizations in the state that do good things, and that's why I think it's so important to bring them in as guest speakers. You know, we didn't invent the wheel as policymakers. I say that all the time. You know, we need to get our ideas from you people that are out there doing this day in and day out. So I think this is, you know, an exciting time for us. This has been an issue. I've been up here since 2005. This is an issue we hear year in and year out. So I look forward to the dialogue. I think it's going to be really interesting. So thank you.
Thank you. Clearly, we're all going to get an education ourselves here over the next period of months or even years. Since we are here ostensibly under the rubric of the Moore Commission, I'm very sensitive to some of the stated priorities, and I've actually mentioned this before. Regionalization is a hallmark of what the Moore Commission is about. And I love to hear about shared services on a voluntary basis, but I do admit I'm concerned about forcing shared services, which may keep students out of the general population when they might be in. So that sensitivity is very important to me. And that brings me to something which may not be as necessary for our experts around the room as it is for we legislators. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm the ignorant one here, which is a matter of definitions. I think we all need to be on the same page when it comes to understanding how special education is taught and would we benefit by actually having somebody who can explain what goes on in the classroom. The dynamic between a special education aide or paraprofessional or teacher and a regular teacher at the same time, how does that dynamic work? Is that efficient? And I have one more little ancillary idea, which may not be all that important in our deliberations, but Connecticut is committed to the spread of health centers within schools. And Terry actually gave me the idea, which is it's a tremendous benefit, particularly to boys in the school system, is that there's a place to go oftentimes for, I guess, more casual mental health services, at least initially. But here is this new resource that we built into a lot of our communities. Is there a way to integrate that more effectively into the special education conversation as well? So it's something else to keep in mind.
Well, thank you. Before we officially convened the meeting, a number of us were in the room and speaking informally, and during that conversation, Representative Cook alluded to the fact that we don't pretend to have all the answers or even close, and, you know, really look to each of the members around this table to give valuable input, and I think we just proved it by going around the table and getting the topics and the suggestions that you've made. I think they're all great. And I want to emphasize the fact that unlike the other Moore Commission subcommittees, this is a select working group. And we're really going to be leaning on each of you to work, and we'll be doing work too, to keep bringing these ideas forward, to keep making suggestions on who we should be bringing in, and to engage in the conversation so that we can really do this in a very comprehensive, collaborative way, taking it one step at a time and really taking the time to try to do this right and to try to reach results that will help all of our kids and districts. So to that point, you know, each of us obviously is very available. Feel free to email us, call us anytime. David Desjardins, you've got his contact information on the sheet before you. There is a website that is now up specific to this working group. You can access it there. Where there is contact information as well. We'll be posting any documents that are brought to us, and you'll be able to access at least audio tapes of these meetings at some point. If CTM picks it up, that will be available on there too, is my understanding. So we're trying to make this as transparent as possible. And I'd just like to add a few other thoughts in listening to everybody around this table that I had, and at least a couple of you mentioned, you know, the state itself and when the state takes control over children. So, you know, DCF at some point, I think we're going to need to have them involved. Obviously, there are a number of parent groups often centered around a particular type of disability. We're going to, over the course of time, want to hear input from each of those. And there'll be ample opportunity for that. We will be going out into areas of the state, not just staying in Hartford. We do have plans to go out at least three meetings outside of here, and hopefully more, in a variety of places in the evenings. We're intending to continue this over the long term through the summer as well and beyond. So there's going to be ample opportunity for people to have input. And one other topic that I'd like to just throw in too is the notion of private providers. And what I learned this morning is that not only do we have approved private providers, but unapproved who are providing services. And while they may not be getting state money directly, they are receiving money from the districts. And I think we need to understand that better. At least I'd like to understand that better. You know, we have approved providers for a reason, and I'd like to understand that approval process. I'd also like to understand how the State Department agrees to the different rates that are paid to the different providers and see if, you know, apples to apples, the rates match up, or what justifies differences in rates, how that's done, and then what types of audits do we have, ongoing audits of the private providers do we have, if any, to make sure that they are providing the services that they promised to provide, that the money is being well spent. I'd like to understand that too. So those are just some of the thoughts that I have as well that are different from what I've heard, but build on the things that you've suggested. Thank you.
Thanks, Brian. Mike, you touched on the IEPs and putting everything online, and when we were briefly meeting beforehand, that was one of the things that I think is a huge component and a time, you know, it's a burden to try to hand audit all of these IEPs to make sure that things are done and done effectively. I legislated a task force a couple of years ago, an IEP task force, to look at how we do the paperwork and the process, and auditing came up then. We did have SCE at the table. I think that we need to bring them back and figure out how do we do this. Is there a way that we as a state can give incentives to districts to all go on to the same shared network using the same data? And if we don't have the same programs, there's no way that this is going to work right. And one side of the state should not be doing something different on the other side of the state. It's just our hands aren't talking. It doesn't work well for us. So that's one of the things that I really would like to dive into as well. And I think the other thing is, as we're discussing the process and definitions, where do we start? Does everybody understand what the process is? How do you get involved in the process? What is, you know, how are the parents educated? Are they educated as to their rights and regulations and what happens when we move forward? There is a book out there. Is every parent given one? Are they supposed to be given one? I know it's online. I mean, those are just concerns for me. I want to make sure that parents are educated as best they can to be able to advocate for their child moving forward, especially if we're discussing burden of proof, because that gets to be, as Kathy would say, you know, it gets to be a very rocky road. Our special needs children, whether it be a high need or a lower need, they all deserve the right to to have the best education that we can. That's why it's called public education for a reason. And then I think that the other topic would be is I'd like to, we've got a great group of people from across the state. If you could reach out to your networks to find out if there's something that another part of the state is doing differently, so we can bring that group of people to the table to hear that. If we know that one district is doing something so well and then another district is really struggling, how do we do that? And there's going to be a clear difference between inner city, suburban, and the likes. And how do our charters and magnets fall into this? And how do we decide who goes where in those regards? Because that's been a concern that's been brought to my attention, that our charters and magnets aren't necessarily enrolling children with need or a percentage of those, as well as our VOTEC schools. So I want to make sure that those populations are given equal opportunity as well. Does anybody have anything else as far as subtopics of topics that we've discussed? I think we have a great list, David. I know your fingers have been going crazy over there. I think that moving forward, as Brian had said earlier, we're going to meet January 9th. We do have snow, like housekeeping things that we can email to you about, like if the building is closed due to weather and things like that. For those of you who drive the distance or over the mountain, it can be somewhat fun and sled-like. So, David, you can send out all of those protocols if we have a meeting scheduled and there's, you know, inclement conditions. And then also if there's a meeting that you know that you're not going to be able to attend, could you just let us know ahead of time? Also, if there's a presenter that's coming that you have helped bring to the table, if they have information that they need to have handed out, please email us documents so we can make copies and make sure everybody has them. David will be good about making sure that they're online as well as giving hard copies to the group. What else am I missing? Terry?
I would like to reiterate, too, for everybody, both the group sitting together working on this and everyone here who's attending, that we are absolutely, all of us, open, and certainly the three of us that are co-chairing this. You could email us or call us at any point with any questions, any issues, any communication. We really want feedback and to know what's going on. So I just want to reinforce that. Thanks.
Jeff, did you have something?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a couple of quick questions, and I apologize I wasn't at the first orientation meeting. So how often are we meeting? I don't know if you've already gone over that. And then, well, for us that are human services, we're up here every day anyway, so it doesn't really matter. And then secondly, are we going to, as we set the agenda for the future meetings, couple of things. One, are you going to send it out ahead of time for people to okay it? And then secondly, are we going to start to break it down into categories so that we have time to also get speakers that we want, you know, because we don't want to waste people's time coming if we're not going to be talking about the issue. So just some housekeeping things for me personally that would help me.
Okay, so I think that we just got a lot of information this morning. And so we're going to sit down and, you know, look through it and try to figure out the best way to organize it. But to your point, yes. I mean, I think it's only fair to give appropriate notice to folks to know what's coming and what we're thinking about. And obviously want to get input as we got this morning, but continuous input for, yeah, this is great or maybe not so much and where our priorities are. So I think that's something that's incumbent upon us to do now that we've gotten this tremendous list and to try to figure out how best to organize it going forward. And on meetings, you asked, we had previously said we're going to try to meet, because it's such a huge topic, we want to keep it moving forward, a couple times a month. Pretty much every other week, we're going to try to keep it to a Thursday. Yeah, I mean, it's a aspirational pace, right, but we want to try to, you know, actually get to something, and we think it's going to take quite a bit of doing to do that. Now, on the meetings themselves, we're trying to keep them to an hour and a half to 2 hours in time frame, so we're not eating up an entire day for people as best we can. I mean, as we go forward and depending on how we proceed, if we ever open things up to the public or something, you know, those can go on for many, many hours, but at least for presentations and informational sessions, we're trying to plan it so that we can keep it to an hour and a half to 2 hours.
So just quickly, and just not to be selfish, but I'm going to be, sorry about it, but you've got, if we're going to stay to the Thursdays and go every other week, right, with sessions starting, you've got four members right here that are on human services, and we meet every Tuesday and Thursday. So that's going to be a little challenging for us unless we perhaps coordinate our time. But I, you know, we're all want to be vested in this issue, and that's why we're here. So if we could kind of maybe talk about that a little bit. And for people that don't understand the legislative process or aren't aware of it, in the short session, you blink and the session is done. It goes that fast. You know it, and I know it. So that's why I'm already starting to get a little nervous about our timeline, you know, especially because human services is, you know, yeah, it's one of the bigger committees, and we have a lot on our plate this session with Medicaid and stuff. So I just want everyone to be aware of that. I really want to be part of this, you know, but Jay's on there. Terry's my ranking. You're on there, Michelle. So, you know, we need to kind of figure this out. So thank you.
And then I think also, as we're discussing timing, does 11 o'clock, and I know that we have discussed this, but I think that we need to discuss this as a group. Does 11 o'clock work well for people? Does 10 o'clock? Does 1 o'clock? Could you all just kind of go around the room and give us a feel for, does this time slot work well, or give us a different time? Later in the day becomes a little bit trickier. I mean, when we're talking like 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, that gets to be a little bit beyond what we would like to see happen, but if you could go through.
Morning is better for me. Earlier is better. That allows me to work a little bit at home and then come here and then go back to the office or to whatever I need to do. 10 o'clock would be great. 9:30 would be great. Thank you.
I'm in Hartford, so for me, I wouldn't work. My schedule is probably easier than everybody else's.
And I'm here a lot anyway, so I can be flexible.
Ditto. I do think if you have a number of speakers, though, you might want to start a little earlier so that we don't go too far.
10 o'clock would probably be ideal, but I'm flexible on that.
11 o'clock is actually ideal for me, but it will depend on if the day ends up changing, because I do have standing meetings on certain days of the week.
I don't think we're talking about changing the day as much as we're talking about looking at the time adjustment.
Okay. So 11 o'clock or 10 o'clock if it stays.
I'm flexible on the time.
I'm flexible as well. Any time after 10 is okay.
Jay is no longer invited to this meeting, unless he brings coffee and bagels. Okay, so maybe 10 o'clock, if that, the consensus around the room. Thank you all for your, yeah. We're going to start. We'll do the January 9th meeting at 10 a.m., and then we'll also do the January 23rd meeting at 10 a.m. as well. 23rd. We start session the first week of February, so that's kind of where Representative Abercrombie, I mean, literally it's a month, and it'll be here quick. So, and then also, you know, if there's, like I said, if there's something else that you feel that we need to address moving forward and you just didn't think about it right now, please send us an email. You can send one of us an email, all of us, send it straight to David. If there's people that are out there that you know that have comments, concerns, questions, or ideas that they would like to be brought to, also, we need to hear those. You know, that's part of our reason for making sure that we get out into the community as we move forward. You know, so, yes.
Just one caveat, and that is, I just was speaking to a representative of the State Department of Education. When they said that they could present on the 9th, the time was set at 11 for them, but we're going to check to see if they might be available at 10. So we'll have to set a deadline.
We could always split it and let. We will, as of right now, we will put it for 10, And then Sarah will let us know. And if we have to move to 11 for the 9th only, we'll send you an email. Okay? Thank you all so very much for all of your input and information and ideas. We look forward to this working group, and have a safe holiday season and travel safely too.